Young and Dumb, a podcast for the young, dedicated, up-and-coming, motivated, and bold. Hear the journey of incredible individuals like you or I, who accomplish many things in their short lifetimes. Allow them to tell their story and share with you how they got to where they are today. And the best part yet is they're only just getting started. Welcome to the Young and Dumb Podcast.
This week, we have another guest on who we've had on before, and it's Swish Goswami. He's a CEO of True Fan, someone who loves to get involved with just about everything, and he's 20 under 20 Canada's top entrepreneurs. So this week, with his company being called True Fan, we had to give him the word fan. Fun. If you listen to Swish talk, you can see that he is thoroughly enjoying his life. Combining his love of sports with business is a dream come true. Accomplished. He's only 22, yet he's achieved more than many do in a lifetime. Nurturing. He is always finding ways to give back, whether it's talking to the youth about entrepreneurship or helping people out just like us who are just at the beginnings of our journeys. This week, we become a true fan with Swish.
Welcome everyone to another incredible episode of the Young and Dumb Podcast. Get Your Grind Up presents round two. It's something a little different that we've brought onto the podcast. It's something that's been coming for a very long time now, and we are glad to have you guys on board with us for the very, very first re-interview. So we have someone from episode 44. You might have remembered him. He's all the way up in Canada right now, but his influence is worldwide. We have Swish. Swish, say what's up to the people.
What's up, man? I really appreciate you guys having me on. I can assure you that though I have not become younger, I have definitely become dumber. So I'm very, very excited to be on and to just keep chatting.
No, I love to hear that. I'm glad it's not the other way around. If you were becoming younger, you'd have a little more things to talk about. But last time we sat down like this, it was, I think, June, something like that. It's been a while, and a lot has happened on your end and on our end since that time. All three of us have become dumber, in a sense. To get into everything, but as you spoke before, back in episode 44, you're about 25-30% of your journey, and we'd love to touch on where you are right now. So Justin, take it away.
Yeah, so if you could turn your loading bar from 0 to 100% now, where do you feel like you are on your loading bar?
In life generally, or just in terms of like True Fan, the company I'm working on?
So before you said you were 21% in all of life, and you said in terms of True Fan, you were 25%. So where do you feel like you are now?
Right. Yeah, I think we're at around 40% for True Fan, and I'm about 25% in life.
All right. Okay. So let's dive into True Fan, because I feel like that's been the bulk of your time of late. It's all over your Instagram. It's all over LinkedIn, everything like that. And when we first had you first on, you were kind of in the funding stage, and now you've had a ton of funding. Talk us through that whole process. How was it? How much did you actually raise? And talk us through that amazing thing that you went through.
Yeah, man. So basically, we thought that fundraising was going to be really easy. We thought we could raise our initial 500,000 round in about 2-3 weeks. The whole process actually took about 4 months, which was ridiculous. We were also raising during the summertime, which, you know, in retrospect, I think is the worst time to raise money because people tend to be gone and they're not replying or checking email. But that being said, the process wasn't hard per se, in the sense of it wasn't like painful, but obviously, you know, it was tiring in the sense of, you know, you heard a lot of no's for various reasons, sometimes reasons that contradicted each other. And then even the yeses that you got weren't necessarily concrete until money was wired in, which could take 2 to 3 months. So for us, I think it was just about staying patient, realizing that we had certain people that immediately came on board, and we were really appreciative of that. And we really try to revolve a lot of our pitches around those initial people. So a couple of the people that initially came on board off the bat were Kieran O'Brien, who's the former head of marketing at Western Union, two NBA agents, Austin and Trevor Eastman, Kyle Kuzma from the Los Angeles Lakers, Devon Reed from the Indiana Pacers. And we also had certain investors that were in Canada, like Manny Pata, who runs New Avenue Capital, and Michelle Romanoff, who runs ClearBank, a hot startup in Toronto, that came on board early. So it was really nice to be able to have those people all done within the first month, and then to be able to take those seven names and start trying to get the other seven people we brought onto our cap table to come on board a little quicker. In total now, we raised over $1 million, though, because we raised another $500,000 about 3 weeks ago from Round 13 Capital. That is the biggest early stage VC in Canada. They're a $200 million fund run by a guy named Bruce Croxon, who sold his company Lava Life, a dating app, for about $168 million a couple of years ago. And so we're really excited to be able to get them on board and to move the company out to Toronto from Vancouver.
That's incredible. It's been 7-8 months since we've last spoken to you, but to come this far to raise over $1 million is incredible, especially for what you guys are trying to accomplish and at the scale that you're trying to do it. I actually just watched the Netflix special Fire, the new Fire Festival special. Incredible. Mm-hmm. And though this has nothing to do with that situation, I got to look at a little bit of the funding perspective of how to get investors and what that essentially looks like. And some of the names that you're reading off that list, including Kyle Kuzma, which is someone who's our age, it's hard to get that through my head, that is being able to invest so much money into your project. How do you find these investors? It's a question that Justin and I often go with through the podcast. How do you find these interviewees? Well, how do you find investors on your end when you're looking to build such a large enterprise in such a short amount of time?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's about getting the initial core group of 3 to 4 people in. So our intros to Kyle Kuzma, our intros to Devon Reed came from the two MBA agents we brought on board, Austin and Trevor Eastman. Once we got them on board, they wanted to get their friends, their colleagues on board. Austin actually played college ball with Kuzma, Jakob Pertl, who played for the San Antonio Spurs, and then DeLon Wright, who plays for the Toronto Raptors. So they all played in Utah together. And so he hit them all up, and Kyle came on board, which is great. But I think it's about finding those initial 3 to 4 people that are in the middle of the web, and then they're going to go find their friends, they're going to go find their colleagues, they're going to tell them about this exciting startup they invested in, they're going to try to persuade them on your behalf to come on board as well.
Okay, so my theory, or not theory, but my thinking of how investing kind of works, because I've never actually had to do it before in terms of finding seed money, is it kind of goes along like the Shark Tank vibe, right? Because that's the only real, I guess, seed funding investing thing that I've ever seen. And even that, when we had a former Shark Tank contestant on and he talked about his whole process with everything, it was a lot more than what we got to see on TV. So I'm sure you've seen Shark Tank or a few episodes of it before. How does it differ from Shark Tank? And is there anything that's the same when you're pitching to these investors?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the whole Shark Tank thing, I think, is done for entertainment. Obviously, the pitches that we did were primarily over the phone. And so actually, weirdly enough, there were some investors that came on board without having ever met us before. We actually have, I think, about 5 investors that have never met us in person, but they just loved the idea. They got a great recommendation from a friend who did meet us, and they wanted to put money in. At the same time, though, I think, you know, the standard questions are definitely asked about your financials, about your valuation, about what the product is, what the traction's like, what the team is. One thing we actually noticed is Canadian investors, American investors, it was really cool to see the difference in questions that they initially asked. So American investors were very focused on the team and specifically around the people that were involved in the project. Canadian investors started off by first asking about financials, like trying to get all the numbers correct, straight and lined up before ever going into the team. So it's really neat just to be able to see that difference, because I think it very much shows, you know, why to a degree America has such hot areas like Silicon Valley, even this, you know, Silicon Alley, if you will, that's popping up in New York now, is because I feel like investors there are willing to put a little more risk into companies that have good people working with them.
So explain to me a little bit about the pressures or the environment that having investors brings upon. Just, you know, being a part of the TrueFan, I guess, team, you have all these investors with a lot of money. They're entrusting you with their funds in order to produce something special. What type of environment does that create for you as a worker and creatively as well? Do you feel like there are any restrictions or, I guess, butting of heads when moving forward with different investors?
Yeah, so I mean, every single person we brought on board is very open to us doing whatever we really want. Like, honestly, they're the types of people that trust us as people a lot, and they know that whatever decision we make, especially around product, is probably going to be the right decision. That being said, I think the pressures are not really, you know, from an internal level. I think they're more from an external level, which is, all right, cool, now that we've raised money, now that we've gotten some media behind this, let's actually prove that the product we're pushing out to clients is meaningful, that they actually like it, and that they don't just see it as some gimmicky ad that they saw because it was on TechCrunch or because it was on Fast Money or NASDAQ or whatever, and they wanted to check it out. So I think the big thing for us isn't as much on the internal side, because our investors are charming, amazing people that we love. And honestly, they're the types of people that really do trust us. And that's actually why we brought them on board, isn't just for their money, but for the relationship that they bring with us. But at the same time, the pressures, I think, are a little more external in terms of having to now deliver on a product that is meaningful, makes people happy, and provides them value.
All right. So you've done your funding, you've got your money, you've finally met your team in person after months of just kind of working through the internet, right? And Slack channels and everything like that. I read that LinkedIn article, which was pretty crazy, or the Medium article. And then what is next for TrueFan?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, the Medium article you're referencing, if anybody wants to check it out, it's called TrueFan, A Year in Review. I think I called it Beauty in Chaos. So if you search that up on Medium, it's about a 20-minute read, but it summarizes our entire first year. In terms of what's next for TrueFan, so we built out a really great platform now that it, actually this month itself, we redesigned and made it look incredibly beautiful. The core features are obviously around fan engagement, so being able to see who your top influential, engaged, and trending fans are on Twitter and YouTube. But we've also added a number of sophisticated features like sentiment analysis, where we can plug into a basic natural language processing system to gauge whether or not a fan has had a positive, negative, or neutral interaction with you, and how you can actually change that around. We've also been able to incorporate a number of filters like location, like the ability even to filter by their following size, so you can find specific micro influencers in your network. And kind of where we want to now move towards is obviously looking at adding other types of platforms, but also trying to add other sorts of data. So can we go beyond to social media? Can we go into sales data, like CRM data from HubSpot or from Salesforce? Or can we even look at web traffic data from Mixpanel and Hotjar and put that all together and find what the intersection is of your top social media fans, your top buyers and sellers, and your top web traffic individuals, and put that into an intersection, like the Venn diagram that has that middle portion in it? That would be really, really cool. The second thing I think is also to move past just fan engagement. I think it's great to, you know, tackle the social listening space that is about a $9 billion market. But what is a much bigger market, which is about $563 billion per year, is the ability for brands to find new customers. So part of what we're building right now is a fan DNA for every single account, which is to say we're taking the average fan that an account has, and we're trying to gauge all the characteristics that make up that fan so that we can then look onto the internet and find people that we think have similar characteristics that brands and influencers can reach out to build up and expand their audience. So can we get them new fans now that we've already shown them what their existing fans are and how they can engage with them?
And that's incredible. Something that I can't wait till it hits the market and we're actually able to see that unfold in front of us. And for influencers and brands in the future, I'm sure they can't wait as well. But shift focus a little bit. I know you, when last time we spoke with you, you had your hands on a lot of different things, including TrueFan. But another big focus of your life was also LinkedIn. That's where we actually found out about who you were, and we were able to connect there first. Let us know about what you're doing on LinkedIn right now, as you saw it to be the next big social medium.
Yeah, I still do. I think, you know, it's actually not late to get onto LinkedIn and start to post. Obviously, the sort of engagement, the sort of amplification you would get a year ago is a lot different than now in terms of it being a bit lower. But that being said, yeah, I mean, I still have a sizable audience on LinkedIn, over 70,000 followers now. I post about 2-3 times every week. I share anything from TrueFan to quotes that I love, to lessons that I've learned, interviews that I've had, speaking engagements that I've given. You know, so I put kind of my entire personal professional life, mixed it together and put that onto LinkedIn, which I like. What I am trying to do, however, is take a lot of my LinkedIn audience and try to also get them to start following me on Instagram. Because what I've noticed is LinkedIn, I have a very professional persona. And obviously you guys follow me on Instagram as well. And you guys know that on Instagram, I'm a totally different person. You know, I'm that type of idiot that's posting memes and I'm sharing polls and I'm all about basketball. And I'm just a little more relatable, I think, as an individual on Instagram, which I think is fine because, you know, again, it's my split between personal and professional. But I'd love for people who are really attached to me on LinkedIn to start looking into my life a little deeper on Instagram.
Yeah, it's great that you mentioned that too, right? The different sort of personas, whether it's professional on LinkedIn and kind of more relaxed on Instagram. And I feel like that's the biggest concern that a lot of students have when they're trying to get onto LinkedIn. They just view it as this place to throw your resume on. You have to be and act like a completely different person. What is kind of your rebuttal to that? And how do people, or how should people get started on this platform, especially young folks?
Yeah, so I think with LinkedIn, don't overcomplicate it. You know, I think a lot of people coming on are like, oh my God, I got to make my profile amazing. I got to get the all-star ranking that LinkedIn has or whatever. You know, fill it out to whatever capacity you can. Make sure that you include as much information about the experiences that you've had. And generally focus on your summary, because that's the first thing that people tend to read, is they click into your name and they read your summary. So just try to make that good. But beyond that, I mean, I would try just commenting on a couple of people's posts to start off with. You know, get comfortable with commenting, hearing back from people, you know, messaging them after you hear back and saying, can we get on a 5-minute call? Start building up a small community of 10 to 15 people, you know, on the platform that you don't go out and meet for coffee or lunch on a weekly basis. And then start going from there in terms of building content then with them or without them. But it literally could be with them. Like, you could then interview those 10 to 15 people and take segments of what they're saying in terms of their advice and putting it out as content. You know, like, I think a lot of people are scared to start on a platform because they're scared of what other people will think about them. I rarely think that if you're sharing quotes from other people or you're sharing great advice that you've gotten from somebody else, that it would piss someone off. And if it did, I feel like that person is invaluable to your life. And you should just cut them out and move on.
And definitely, I've seen how just commenting on someone's post or just interacting on LinkedIn has allowed me to grow at the period where I was pretty active on LinkedIn, grow somewhat exponentially. Just how engaging with people in a professional setting that allows people to connect with others and just grow. I'm glad that you're able to share those tips with us. Going forward, last time we spoke, again, you spoke about your wishes to become an entertainer and to possibly get into politics. Where are we on those updates?
Same old. I mean, so part of what I'm doing this year, obviously, is focusing a little more on, you know, traditional methods of building a personal brand. So I have a book coming out in October called The Young Entrepreneur. It's written with my best friend at the University of Toronto, Quinn Underwood. Who I believe, has he come on your podcast or no?
Yes, both him and his brother both came onto our podcast. It was a hilarious
episode. Yeah, I bet. They're awesome people. But at the same time, yeah. So, I mean, we've written this book and we're putting it out in October. And then I've just been doing a lot of interviews and a little TV work. Recently was doing a BBC shoot for BBC One, which is really cool. And so, honestly, from the entertainment side, I think it's, you know, to that capacity, there's not more that I can really do on that end. But definitely my goal is still to kind of usher myself into that path. I don't know exactly what it would look like off the bat. But my long-term goal still, and I think will always be, running for office to some capacity. I just at least want to try, you know, figuring out like what I stand for and trying to put that out to the world and see whether or not they align themselves with me or not.
Most definitely. I think you're building a solid, solid foundation right now for that future whenever you do go into politics and like make that full push. So we get to move on. This is a new segment that we're adding on where we're calling people from our followers on Instagram, and you shared the post. So give us 1 second to call Sam Evans and see what question he's got for you.
Got it.
A little touch of Get Your Grind Up magic here.
Yo, Sam, what's going on?
What's going on, Justin? How are you?
Doing well, doing well. So we got Swish on the line right now, and he's ready for your question.
What's going on, Swish? So I'm going to throw a different question at you than probably what you guys will be getting. So I know you – I see you commenting on Dennis Rodman all the time on Instagram, so I kind of – just wanted to get your insight on the troll job that he's doing right now and how Elliot's kind of working all of that. Because honestly, it's genius with how much he's been able to grow the account over the past few months. But I just wanted to know what your take is on how he's growing it and any relevant tips that could be put into just a normal business account on there from what he's doing.
Yeah, 100%, man. Sam, always a pleasure chatting, firstly. I think in terms of Dennis Rodman, so obviously Elliot is his social media manager, is on his team. I think it's smart. At the same time, I mean, Dennis's image has always been like that, right? He's been a troll. He's been that type of person that hasn't been afraid to really do anything that's unconventional, whether it be the hairstyles that he's had, the interviews that he's given, whatever it is, the stances that he's taken, the people that he's met, whatever it is. So I think it's totally aligned with his brand and it is capturing people's attention, right? Like, I honestly haven't gone through a major sports post without seeing either Dennis Rodman put that little troll post comment up or other people being like, I wonder what Dennis thinks about this, and that getting a lot of likes as well, right? So I think people are noticing. And I believe that when I first started following Dennis, when Elliot started working with him a couple of months ago, he was at like 280,000 followers. Now he's at over 550. So whatever Elliot's doing is clearly working.
Absolutely. I mean, it's crazy to see how much that video that obviously they deleted it or whatever happened last night, but how much attention that's gathering from everybody on Instagram. It's wild. And like you said, it's over 500,000 followers now. So it's pretty crazy how much he's been able to grow that account in just a few short months.
Totally. Totally. And I think he'll hit 1 million probably by the end of the year, especially if they can do a little more original content. Which I'm really excited to see what Elliot has up his sleeve because he's super smart when it comes to that. But I'm you know, it's super cool also because I feel like Dennis Rodman is a very well-known player. So it's actually kind of absurd that he didn't have a big following before Elliot came in, you know? Like when you think about it, Dennis Rodman, I think most people who follow basketball would know who he is, but he doesn't have a major social media following until like now, I think.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And to stick on the basketball topic, you're from Toronto, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I align myself most closely with Toronto because I am Canadian and it's the only sports team that we really have.
So Sixers and Toronto match up in the playoffs this year, hypothetically. How many games does it take for the Sixers to beat them?
So I'm going to stop you right there for a second. The Raptors will win. The Raptors will win. I actually think it'll probably take 5 or 6 games for the Raptors to beat them. But Kawhi Leonard is a beast. Ben Simmons cannot shoot from deep. Kyle Lowry will lock him down. Pascal Siakam is having the year of his life right now. You know, you take a look at our bench as well. It outplayed the 76ers in every single way. I think the only trouble that the Sixers would ever give the Raptors is with Joel Embiid. But you know what? I trust that if you have Jonas Valanciunas down low, if you have like any one of the bigs that we got down low, like, we're going to give up points to Joel Embiid, but he can't do everything on his own. Also note that last year when they played in the playoffs against Boston, they showed how immature they were as a team. Like, and I think they sometimes even are. Like, in crunch time, they don't know who they're giving the ball to. They don't run play sets well. So, I don't know. I feel like my chances with the Raptors going forward and actually going to the finals this year and then probably losing are high.
I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that.
I love
it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sam, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Good talking to you guys always.
Of course. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Well, that was awesome. A little bit of a twist there with the basketball question, but
I like that.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So now we get to move on to our favorite part, which is the deep thinking question. So we conjured up a few different questions from the last time. So are you ready, Swish?
All right, let's do it. Wait, do you guys remember my answers also from the last time? I don't want to contradict myself.
Oh, well, we changed the questions completely.
Oh, you changed it. Thank God. Okay, good. Thank God. All right, good.
All right. So question number one, you dropped out of college. Your brother is a lawyer. If you could go back to college, what degree would you get and why?
Yeah, so this is interesting. I do have a plan that, you know, maybe I actually would go back to college after TrueFan. If I went back, the degree that I'd likely want to study would be around filmmaking, or it would be around screenwriting, like creative writing or screenwriting. I feel like it needs to be something creative because I don't necessarily want a political science degree. I think that's too basic. I definitely do not want a business degree because I feel like I've learned so much more from building a startup than any classroom could teach me on that front. And so I think something creative would actually prepare me for that new phase, I guess, going into the entertainment industry after.
I hear that 100%. I mean, even me just being, let's see, 6-7 months out? Nah, it's more than that. Almost a year out from college. Going back, I'd probably choose something a little different too. I feel like as we grow and progress into the entrepreneurial world, what our likes, our wants, our needs, especially creatively, as a creative, kind of shifts our focus of not really sticking in a box and being restrained to these different types of degrees and kind of going elsewhere. So it's really cool that you're able to bring that up there. But going to our second question, I know we stumped you last time with our autobiography question. I still have that one up for you. We're not going to get into that. We're going to take it back. So pretend we were back in our younger days. Everything was a lot easier for us, making friends, communicating, just enjoying life as a kid was very easy. Now, as an adult, we look back on our younger years and we always ask ourselves, why can't this be like it used to be when we were younger? What do you think are three things that adults lack that kids excel at?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, to be fair, though, I actually don't feel like I'm that different from when I was 10 or 11 years old. I don't know if that's good or bad. Obviously, from a knowledge perspective, I hope that I've increased. but I think, you know, from a maturity perspective, I like matured very early on in life, in the sense of like, I wasn't like a boring snob, but at the same time, like I knew generally what was right and wrong for me. And I was very clear on like making decisions that were aligned with each. But that being said, to answer the question directly, the three things that I think adults lack that kids have, I mean, the one thing is just the effort to try something and fail. I know a lot of people in my life, and I bet people listening as well do, that if there's a chance of failure, they won't do something because they're just scared of making a fool out of themselves, or they're just scared to fail in general. And I think kids, when you see them, like they're just walking around, you know, picking up something, falling, tripping, doing some dumb thing, saying some dumb thing. Like kids, I think, are really innocent. And the part of innocence comes with also realizing that they have flaws, right? And that they're fine making a mistake because they're just going to move on, dust themselves off, and then continue on with life. So that type of mentality, I think, is what a lot of adults lack. The second thing is, I think kids are very, I think, for the large part, they're very inclusive with one another. Like, obviously, bullying is a problem that happens. And I think bullying actually statistically is shown to happen a lot more in high school than in previous grades. But when you're a kid, like, you know, you're 10 to 15 years old, and somebody comes up and says, hey, can I play soccer with you? Like, I feel like a lot of kids are just a lot more inclusive with saying, yeah, let's do it. Like, you know, let's hang out, whatever it is. Than adults, where I feel like a lot of adults, when they grow older, they start to get into their little niches, their cliques, and they don't really stray outside of that because either they're afraid to, or, you know, they don't have the time or the bandwidth mentally to be able to fit another person into their life. The third and final thing I would say that kids have that adults generally don't is empathy. And this might be wrong, but I personally do believe, maybe as an optimist, that kids growing up are a tabula rasa, like a blank slate that you can mold into whatever you'd like based on, you know, their schooling, based on their parenting, based on who they are and circumstances they grow around. But I feel like kids a lot of times are very empathetic growing up. They can relate to other people's problems, especially past the age of about 10. They start to become cognizant of other people a lot more. Then I feel like adults sometimes, like, they're still consumed by their own problems, that they feel like their own problems are the end of the world pretty much. Like, there's nothing more than just my problems in my life. And they don't really put things well into perspective. As opposed to children, I think, are a little more empathetic to understanding that maybe their problems aren't the only things that are affecting the world.
I love that. Yeah, I think those are three huge things that kids do have. And then kind of growing up and worrying about people's opinions about them or whatever it may be, that's kind of how they get molded into the going down those paths. But I agree there. So before we ask our last question, where can people find you? Where can people follow you on Instagram and kind of learn more about your basketball side and everything like that?
Yeah, man. So obviously LinkedIn, very clear way to connect with me. So that would just be Swish Goswami, S-W-I-S-H, and then G-O-S-W-A-M-I. And then on Instagram, it would be GoSwish, so G-O-S-W-I-S-H. And if you heard this podcast, feel free to reach out, say that you heard it. I'll reply and we can have a conversation from there.
Awesome. I love it. So final question, what is a question that you wish that we asked you?
This is like, you know, I think the interview, by the way, was overall fantastic. I love the questions you guys asked, but one thing that I learned was really neat as an interviewer would be just to ask a simple question, just saying, how are you? Like, how are things? And keep it as open-ended as you can, because I feel like a lot of times, especially this happens to me a lot when I'm speaking and then people come up after to talk to me, or, you know, it could even be the other way, like I'm going up to talk to someone else. I notice that a lot of people go right into what they want to say, and they don't really like go right into saying, hey, how are you? Like, how are things, you know, as a human being, like, how are you feeling? So that's maybe the question I would ask is how are you feeling? Like, how are you at this current moment in terms of your state of mind and how you're feeling?
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because, you know, on our manners there, let's bring it back and let's pretend we're starting this all over again. Swish, glad to have you on the podcast today. How are you doing?
Honestly, I'm pretty tired. I'll be very honest. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say that. I'm delighted. I'm happy. I'm glad. Definitely very positive. Very, very happy with the progress we made over the last month. But at this current moment, there's a lot happening in terms of TrueFan and the book coming out and speaking and LinkedIn and all of that I feel a little stretched. So I'd love, you know, when round three comes up, you know, in 8-9 months, whatever it is, I hope that the one thing that I can take away from that interview when I give it is I feel a lot more balanced and I feel a lot more healthy, because right now I feel like I'm being put into multiple places and I'm tiring myself out a little.
Well, I mean, you're tired, rightfully so. You've done a lot of work over the past couple months and just in general, working on TrueFan, getting everything up to date. But we'll definitely take note of that, make sure that when that time does come for round three, that you are, in a sense, much more balanced. But again, Swish, we would like to take the opportunity to thank you for taking the time out of your day, hopping on the podcast and, you know, going for round two with us.
No worries, man. I really appreciate this. Also, really, really stoked that you guys have kept up with the podcast. And how many episodes now have you guys done?
I think this one will release to be like 112 or something like that. Yeah.
It's insane, guys. It's really insane. Really, really give yourself a pat on the back, because a lot of people, I think, start a podcast and then they like quit after 12 episodes. But the fact that you guys have kept going with this and the questions and the excitement, I can hear it. Like, I can feel it. It hasn't gone down in any way. Really, really, like, kudos on that.
Really appreciate that, man. And everyone listening out there, as you heard it, we are not done. We've hit our first round two and we have many more rounds to go. This is only the beginning. You've seen it here with TrueFan, with Swish, and with the Young and Dumb podcast, the Get Your Grind Up movement. We are here to take over. This is just the beginning. If you want to learn a little bit more about Swish and his ventures, hop on our website, Get Your Grind Up. getyourgrind.com, or you can follow us on social, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You already know, at Get Your Grind Up. We'll be back very soon. We're coming at you all 2019. Always remember, we are all young and dumb.
And never forget, get your grind up.
We'll see you guys soon. Peace.
Peace.